Jesus mostly taught by telling stories. Stories about ordinary sorts of events, about household activities and objects like sweeping the kitchen. Stories we now believe that may have been sometimes about then current events, about events that the people that were listening to him would have been familiar with, although to us they don't mean anything now. And in that spirit, I'm going to tell you a story today. One I know Jesus would approve of. One that, like his stories, I think illustrates an important truth. My story happens to be about an actual event, as we think some of Jesus' stories were. An event that took place, oh, not that long ago. It took place back when I was in seminary studying to be a Unity minister, back in the early 1970s. And it had to do with a garden party. Now, it wasn't one of the garden parties that they hold from time to time in the beautiful rose gardens at the village that you'll see if you come with us on our trip. Nor was it your typical garden party that they hold at, oh, a country club or behind some rich matron's mansion or at the White House. It wasn't that kind of garden party at all. Actually, this garden party was held at Madison Square Garden in New York City. It's the one that was immortalized in Rick Nelson's last big hit song, Garden Party. He recorded it in 1972. In fact, it was one of his biggest hits. It ran for 3 straight months in the top 40. Sold a lot of records, and for the first time in a while. But it was in reference to a garden party, a party that took place at Madison Square Garden a year earlier, in October of 1971. On October 15th, 1971, Ricky Nelson was invited, along with a number of other recording artists from the late 50s and early 60s, to perform at a rock and roll revival concert. A revival of the kind of rock and roll that was popular when I was young. And Rick was just one of the artists there. Chuck Berry was there. In fact, I saw Chuck Berry on TV just the other day. He looks much the same. He never looked that good, but he looks the same. Bo Diddley was at this concert. Bobby Rydell was there. All these stars of yesteryear, they all were stars that had big hits about a decade earlier, too. And a lot of them had more hits than Ricky Nelson, who was no slouch himself. If you look it up, you'll find out that Ricky Nelson, between about 57 and 62, had more than 50 songs in the top one, in Billboard's top 100 charts. And he had 18 in the top 10. And he was really almost a minor act compared to Bobby Rydell or Chuck Berry or some of the others. So these were guys that had been very successful. But that had been a while ago. None of them had done much lately. Oh, some of them were still performing, still touring where and when they could. But a lot of them were still playing the same music they'd played in the previous decade. Rick Nelson, on the other hand, had progressed some. His music had kept evolving. He had, I suppose you could say, grown musically. In fact, in the couple of years prior to this concert, he had gone in a kind of a new direction, taken his music in a more country-tinged direction. He was a little ahead of his time in this. But even though he had grown musically, his popularity certainly had not grown. It had been a long, long, long time since Ozzie and Harriet's Boy had a hit record. But all that was about to change, and as the result of this one concert, it was his comeback concert. But not in the way you might imagine. Because on that night, All the other performers showed up looking and sounding much as they had in the 50s. But nobody sent Rick Nelson the memo. He showed up dressed well, dressed the way we did in 1971. Instead of the shiny suit and the skinny tie and the slick back hair. Some of you guys had shiny suits and slick back hair too. Wasn't just me. You know, I didn't always comb it back just to cover the spot. But instead of showing up looking as he had in his heyday, he showed up wearing, well, bell bottoms. He had kind of longish straight hair. The fashion of the time. And while he started his set playing some of his hits from yesteryear and was warmly enough received, he decided to then let his audience see what he was doing now, show them how his act had progressed. But the moment he strayed from Betty Sue to his new stuff, that garden party ceased to be a party for Rick Nelson. For the first time in his entire musical career, he was literally booed off stage. And booed off stage in a way that only a New York City audience knows how to do. Booed off stage with such vehemence, they were so enthusiastic booing him off stage that they actually called security in to escort him and his band off stage so no harm would befall them. And he didn't make it back up on stage for the second act as he had was supposed to have done. Now he watched the rest of the show from the wings. So his big comeback concert, this was the biggest concert he'd performed in years, 10 years probably, looked like his biggest flop. But in the classic example of turning lemons into lemonade, Rick Nelson turned this onstage disaster into a comeback, into the biggest hit he had in years, into one of the biggest hits he had ever. And I believe what happened is he had something of an epiphany that night as he was trying to play his new music, as he was getting booed off stage, as he was watching the other acts still performing their old material from the wings. I believe Rick Nelson had an epiphany. An epiphany that not only spoke to him and inspired his song, but something that speaks to us all, has an important message for us all, that inspired all of us to, well, to keep that song on the chart so long and buy all that vinyl way back when. Something that really is summed up in the last line in the refrain of the song. The last line, if you gotta play at a garden party, I wish you a lot of luck. But if memories were all I sang, I'd rather drive a truck. And the refrain, but it's all right now. I learned my lesson well. You see, you can't please everyone. So you got to please yourself. I believe most of us go through lifetimes trying to be crowd pleasers. That's our goal, to be a crowd pleaser. To be the person we think everyone else wants us to be. We go through our lives trying to please everyone except ourselves. Even most of what people do in the name of self-improvement is really an attempt to make us into a self other than our actual one. And it's not even to change ourself, just change the way others perceive us. To make an improvement in the way other people, maybe your boss, or members of the opposite sex, or members of the same sex at the bar you hang out at or at the gym, or maybe all those people you think might show up at your upcoming high school reunion. We do all these things to impress them. We try to lose weight, we try to get in shape, we try to dress right so we look good for everyone else. We buy expensive perfume, we wear cologne, we use mouthwash and deodorant so we smell good to everyone else. We try to live down our past failures and embarrassments, to live up to our past glories. And most of all, to meet what we perceive to be other people's expectations, to be the person we think they want us to be, or at least to get them to believe that we are that person. And I think we've even convinced ourselves that putting everyone else first is the right thing to do, the moral thing to do, the spiritual thing to do, the Christian thing to do. Put everyone else first. The line forms from me forward. And by the time it gets around to me, there's never anything left. But is that really the right thing to do, the spiritual thing to do, the Christian thing to do? Remember that quote from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount that I read last week from Matthew 5, where he said, "You are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hidden. No one, after lighting a lamp, puts it under a bushel basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." Well, it seems to me what Jesus is saying is we should be letting our light shine more and more, not trying to hide it under a bushel. Even if we think it's exactly the basket everyone else in our life would like the most. Selfishness is not a good thing. That's true. However, genuine self-expression, expressing our genuine, authentic self, as opposed to the person we think other people wish we were, I believe that is a good thing, maybe the best thing. Jesus said the highest commandment was to love God, and one that's just like it. To love our neighbor as ourselves, not instead of ourselves. Not instead of ourselves. So maybe we need to appreciate our real selves, the unique individual that we truly are, and the one we are now. not the one we once were, or the one we hope to be someday. Not the young self we remember, the new and improved self we aspire to, but the real self, the genuine self. Because Scripture tells us that God created us all in His own image and after His own likeness. But if you look around you, you'll notice something about that. God may have created us all in His image and after His likeness, but He didn't create any one of us just like any other one of us, did He? Even identical twins, if you get to know them, if you really get to know them, you have no trouble telling them apart. You see their personality, you realize they are two very different people, even if they look exactly alike. And the rest of us, although we seem to try to fit into whatever the style is at the time, whatever the size is at the time, none of us actually fit. None of us actually wears that size. None of us actually looks that way. I look like, well, me, and you look like you. And maybe that's exactly what God had in mind. Maybe what God had in mind was diversity, individuality, variety, not conformity to uniformity. That's artificial. God did not cast us off from the same mold. You know what? Spirit broke the mold when it made every one of us. Spirit broke the mold when it made each and every one of us, and we need to start doing likewise. We need to start breaking the molds. The molds we've been trying to squeeze ourselves into, the molds we've been trying to squeeze everybody else into. Free ourselves from these artificial ideas of who we're supposed to be, and free others from the molds of our creation that we've been trying to cast them in. Liberate ourselves and our loved ones from this artificial idea of who we are, of who society says we're supposed to be, of who religion says we're supposed to be. I don't think our goal, spiritually or humanly, is for everyone to look, think, believe, and behave exactly the same. That would make our Creator a very dull God. There is not even a single oak tree that's the same. There is not even a single apple that's the same. And you and I, well, we are far more diverse than apples and oak trees. We are each so unique, so individual. Our goal isn't to fit in, it is to figure out where we fit in and how we fit together. To be our true selves, and you know what? That's really the only person you will ever be capable of being, your true self. Anything else is pretense. Anything else is just make-believe. Now, this is going to take some work. Because the sad thing is, when I say we need to learn to be our authentic selves, our true selves, well, so few of us have any clear idea at all of who that is. Most of us have been so busy trying to be who we thought everybody else wanted us to be, that we've given remarkably little thought to who we are, what we want, how we feel, what we honestly think about anything. For most of us, we have lived so much for others that our genuine selves may be a mystery. Well, it's time we tried to solve that mystery. How did St. Paul put it in Colossians? The great mystery of the ages and generations, now revealed, now solved, is Christ in you, your hope of glory. Of course, we should care for other people and about other people, even make sacrifices for the people we love. But as Spirit has taught me repeatedly over the last year or two, and hopefully I finally learned my lesson well enough I don't have to repeat it again. If I don't take care of myself, I'm not able to take care of anyone else. And you know what else? I think it's not only true that you can't please everyone. In fact, the people you try hardest to please, trust me, they're never pleased. Not only can't you please everyone, you got to please yourself, but although occasionally if you try to do that, occasionally you might get booed off stage. It won't be a stage you should be on. It will be a stage you should put behind you. You don't belong there anymore. And even then, that will rarely happen. Because in the long run, not only do you have to please yourself, but instead of others, but you will find the best way to please God and everyone else and be a hit is to please and be yourself. Let's pray about this and to center ourselves for our experience of God in prayer. Let's know that God is real. God is here. And we are now in the presence of God's pure being. There is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent. Together, there's only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God the good, omnipotent, and so it is.